This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, good morning and a good Throwback Thursday to you as we will have our third Throwback Thursday today. And we are also looking ahead to the New York Giants and the San Francisco 49ers for Thursday Night Football. Now, this is a game where the Giants come in after a come-from-behind victory against the Arizona Cardinals. And they did so by scoring 31 points in the second half. In fact, in four halves of football, that was the only half in which they scored any points. They were shut out in the first game against Dallas, and they were shut out in the first half against Arizona. But Daniel Jones came out of the locker room and looked like a different quarterback. But he's going up against a Niners team that's 2-0 and led by Brock Purdy. This is a game in which Daniel Jones was drafted number in the first round. He was drafted, I think, ninth in the first round a couple of years ago. And Brock Purdy, who we all know is Mr. Irrelevant. And there's another issue involving quarterbacks in the National Football League. Now, a couple of days ago, I talked about how what is going on with quarterbacks, what it feels like the modern quarterback. Meaning, it just feels like there is very, very short amount of time before we make determinations on players in this league. Now, in the good old days, a quarterback would be drafted, have a couple of years under his belt, and then start emerging as like a legitimate quarterback in the NFL. Now, we are making judgments on guys 1 year in, 2 years in, 3 years in, into this league, and sometimes that judgment means that they have to bounce around for a bit. And that leads me to Justin Fields of the Chicago Bears. Justin Fields last year looked like a quarterback that had potential. The Bears weren't very good. They ended up with the worst record in the league. But man, people felt like, well, Justin Fields is an exciting player. He led the team in rushing, but they felt like, man, you give this guy a little bit more time, he's going to develop into a star. He needs a better team around him, of course, but man, there's a lot of potential. And there was a lot of optimism this offseason that Justin Fields could be that level quarterback. There was talk of Justin Fields being an MVP candidate before the season started, which is insane when you think that Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow are likely to win that award. But it wasn't that people really thought that. They just wanted to make a statement about the potential of what Justin Fields could do in 2023. Well, two games in and the verdict is, holy cow, he may not be able to play in this league. Right? Justin Fields is complaining about the robotic nature of the team, kind of throwing his little shade at the coaching staff, but then comes back later and says, really, I have to play better. It's on me. I have to do better. He doesn't go through his progressions. He's very nervous in the pocket. They're shortening his throws so that he is a little bit more crisp playing at the NFL level. But in the end, after 2 weeks, the verdict is in that he's having a crappy year and that Justin Fields may be a bust when it comes to being a future NFL quarterback. We are at this point now where quarterbacks are younger and younger in this league. Mike Sando at The Athletic has pointed out that when you look at draft picks from 2006 to 2016, a 10-year period, where if you were drafted in 2016, you're kind of a legit veteran, that there are only a handful of quarterbacks that are still left in the league from the draft class. Matt Stafford, Ryan Tannehill, and Jared Goff as legit starting quarterbacks in this league. There are a few players still in the league, but as backup somewhere, some of them you don't even remember where they've landed. It means that the quarterbacks now are very young, and they're being asked to do a lot of things. Like I said a couple of days ago, I understand when we have other sports and we don't exactly produce an awesome tree of talent. But in a football crazy culture, it blows my mind that we are not at a point where we have a plethora of legitimate quarterbacks. Now, I'm not talking about the Joe Burrows of the world or the Patrick Mahomes of the world or the Josh Allens of the world. Anytime you have a talent pool of anybody, there should be a group of players within that talent pool that excel larger than the group. Those individuals would excel no matter what size the pool actually is. But the size of the pool is really, really small. And I don't know what the answer is to this. Daniel Jones is playing tonight. He just got $40 million a year this offseason. And much to the chagrin of Giant fans who thought that money should have gone to Saquon Barkley and maybe franchise tag your quarterback just to make sure Daniel Jones is the real deal under Brian Daboll rather than making a commitment to Daniel Jones and now you're locked into him for a few years. That's the nature of this position. But he's going up against a guy that was the final pick in the draft, not in round one, the draft. And all he's done is win every game he finishes. That's what he has on his resume right now in Brock Purdy. And even in a win against the Rams, Brock Purdy is still saying things like, well, I got to get a little better still. There's still some minutia in the details of the way he throws the ball downfield that might need to be better given the weapons around him. So what's the problem? Is it coaching? Is it better defenses? Look, in the end, what is football? Football is a comparison to war, right? The acquisition of real estate. That's what the game is. There's a parallel to that and the trenches of World War I, right? Your job is to violently obtain real estate to get closer and closer to the enemy's territory. That's what football is, right? So when the game gets as advanced as it keeps getting, every position goes from some basic understanding of what this game is to a lot more complicated. And the window for quarterbacks to get that complication on the highest level is very short. So I went online and I said, look, I'm going to go back to 2018. All right. And I'm going to write down every single quarterback that was drafted in the first round. And we're going to determine how many of those quarterbacks are still around. Now, the reason I chose 2018, because I went, let's go back 5 years. Now, just to make this point, I did not include the 2023 draft picks. They're rookies. They've only played two games. The verdict is still out. We don't really know. Right. And the reason I did this is because I was talking to my brother last night, and he was talking to me about the Steelers game. He's a Cowboys fan. He's really high on what they're doing. He's kind of making fun of the Steelers offense. And I said, you know what's interesting is that I'm watching Kenny Pickett, and there's something that hits me. Now, this is a guy that played a little more than half of last season, taking over for Mitch Trubisky. So he didn't even play a full season. His first rookie training camp was Mitch Trubisky was going to be the starter, and he's only played two games this year. And yet I feel like this isn't it. This isn't the guy. This just isn't the guy. And why would I make a judgment on that? When it could take 3-4 years for a guy to develop. But let's go through this, shall we? 2018, here are your draft picks. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. That's 2 of 5 draft picks from 5 years ago that are still in this league as legitimate starters. Now, Baker Mayfield is a starter in Tampa, but he's not a legitimate starter in the same way Josh Allen is a starter or Lamar Jackson is a starter. Baker Mayfield is on his fourth team since being drafted in 2018. Let's be honest. He's a place filler. Now, he might do good in Tampa Bay, and they might make him the starter, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be looking for a franchise quarterback. Mayfield is a journeyman, even if he's starting right now. Oh, they may have said nice things about Sam Darnold in San Francisco, but the reality of it is Brock Purdy is the starter. And Josh Rosen, I have no idea where he is. Kyler Murray in 2019, injured, but is Arizona so high on Kyler Murray still that they're not playing the Caleb Williams game? Daniel Jones, $40 million man. Dwayne Haskins is not applicable, obviously tragically passing away. 2020. Joe Burrow, check. Tua Tagovailoa, check. Justin Herbert, check. Jordan Love, wait and see. 2021, Trevor Lawrence, check. But this is where it gets fun. Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. Four guys drafted in 2021 in the first round. Zach Wilson, tons of groans that he has to start for the New York Jets. Trey Lance, bust, out. Now with the Cowboys, we may never see him again. Justin Fields, they're already talking about after two games into this season, he may not be able to play in the NFL. Mac Jones, The Patriots are 0-2 for the first time since 2021, and he's had three different offensive coordinators. And the last one, first-round pick last year, Kenny Pickett, as I mentioned earlier. So while this group in the last 5 years, again, not counting the three rookies this year, wait and see, we don't know. I've only checked off about six guys that are like worthy of your long-term contract, worthy of the $50 million a year, worthy of being a franchise quarterback for years and years and years and years. And very few of these guys are going to make it. Like I said, there's a couple. We'll see. Daniel Jones, Jordan Love, we'll see. But as far as the star power of this position, this has not been graded very well over the last 5 years. Now, Could I go through a 5 year period at any time in the NFL and do the exact same thing and come up with names that didn't last, didn't make it 1 year in, 1 year out? Yeah. But I'd also find a lot of quarterbacks that struggled in their rookie season, struggled in year two, struggled maybe in year three, and then finally popped. Commitment to that position. Now, why? Maybe because the position was a simpler position back in the day. We've been talking about this with running backs, where the running game was so vitally important. It's a new downfield game. You better be able to throw the ball 40, 45 times a day. And maybe this game has gotten overcoached. We'll talk more about this as the show progresses, because I think that the comments on Justin Fields are more than hot takes. The comments on other quarterbacks are more than hot takes. It's a legitimate concern that we're not growing solid QBs enough in this league. We'll continue in our Throwback Thursday coming up next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are going back to 1970 on a Throwback Thursday. You know what? We could have done a ton of stuff for Throwback Thursday today.
There's a lot to choose from.
You gave me some really good ones. The runner-ups for Throwback Thursday include in 1982, the NFL players went on a 57-day strike. I'm old enough to remember that. I was very young, and I did not understand it. Like, my Uncle Terry tried to explain it to me. I was like a kid. I was like eight. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand why football wasn't on my TV. But I will not forget getting a phone call from my Uncle Terry, telling me that the strike was over when it was done. I remember Sports Illustrated. The cover of Sports Illustrated was a flattened football. It said why the NFL went on strike. It was really, really dark day. It was really sad. I was like nine. So I was old enough to really love football and read up on football, but I couldn't understand the working, striking thing. The dream team for the 1992 Olympics was announced by USA Basketball in 1991 on this date. In 2008, Ryder Cup Golf, Valhalla, U.S. Beats Europe. And that was a big deal because Europe had really, really started to kick in the domination. And U.S. Finally won the Ryder Cup. Also, according to Darren Rovell on this date, Mike Piazza hit that famous home run, that 9-11 home run in the Mets game in 2001. A lot to choose from, but we went with something very iconic and probably one of the most important things that had ever happened in sports television. That is the first broadcast of Monday Night Football. It was on this date in 1970. An absolute gamble back then to put sports in primetime. And it worked. It really worked. And it was a gamble. Like I know it seems ridiculous now, but primetime TV back in 1970 was way different than it is today. Most people don't even know what shows are on now. But back in 1970, you did.
You knew everything.
You knew every show.
Yep.
You knew all the lineups, and you made a commitment to what you were going to watch every night, and you stayed on that channel. And we are talking some of the most, I mean, shows that would get 30, 40 million people every night. Big time television programs, and they were going to put sports on, and they were like, well, even though sports is popular, sports is very niche. Meaning if I put on I Love Lucy, you know, let's just say, or I don't know, any TV show, MASH, whatever it is. If I get a TV show, I can get all the sports fans, I can get most of the sports fans, and I can get all the non-sports fans. If I put sports on, I only get the sports fans. But that was not the case with Monday Night Football. What they found was that that Monday Night Football became a television show. They had, once they kind of worked out the broadcasters, Keith Jackson was on the initial broadcast team. He later was moved to college football. Great story about that, by the way. Keith Jackson was in Nebraska, and he found out through a trade publication that he was out of Monday Night Football. So ABC didn't even tell him. So he was like, when he called into the home office in New York, they said, well, Keith, we are making a change. We're going to make you the voice of college football. We're going to make you the lead college football guy. And, you know, Monday Night Football was a big deal, and it was primetime TV, and he was kind of disappointed. And they said, we tried to call you. And when he got to New York, Keith Jackson reportedly had a stack of messages that he had from the hotel, and he threw it down at Chet Forty's desk and said, find it. He was so angry. But it worked. Keith Jackson became the voice of college football, iconic voice of college football, and the broadcast team that they did eventually settle on, Frank Gifford, Howard Cosell, and Don Meredith, became national figures. There were groupies for Howard Cosell. He never took advantage of it, but there were groupies waiting for Howard Cosell. According to the book Monday Night Mayhem, which is a great read if you want to know the history of Monday Night Football. In fact, Howard Cosell, women would propose, you know, they would play around with Howard in the bar area, and Howard would give them a hotel number, but it was the hotel number of a producer. And that was who it was. And Howard would just do that all the time. He loved his wife so much, he didn't partake in any of that. But they were megastars. I mean, they were megastars. And if your city was lucky enough to have Monday Night Football come to your city, it was a party. That's what you did. There were punching bags with Howard Cosell's face on it. I mean, that was like Howard Cosell was like a hated broadcaster, but he was very, very super famous. And Monday Night Football became an instant hit. There was a lot. They tried to make it so that the broadcast booth was funny. They made, they would have jokes. Don Meredith was always cutting up something. So if the game was boring, people still watched because that trio in the booth, or at least I should say the two. Frank Gifford was really just the solid play-by-play guy. And the other two were worthy of watching. But you and I have talked about this before in the development of technology and the development of the acquisition of information. One of the main reasons that Monday Night Football took off was Howard Cosell's halftime highlight show.
Yes.
Because it was the only way you could see the highlights back then in the 70s of games.
For me, that was more important. Like, I got into Monday Night Football in the 80s. I mean, that's when I came of age, and, you know, it was like mid 85, 86. And we had a standard date. It was always myself, my cousin, my uncle, my grandfather, all at my grandfather's house, and we would watch Monday Night Football. The game, sometimes, you know, I'm a kid, so I'm in and out of the game, usually hanging out with my cousin. Either we're playing football outside or whatever. But halftime, I had to sit there and watch because it was the only time I got to see my teams.
Yeah, exactly. Cosell was once, there was one incident during the history of it where Cosell was drunk. He claims it was medication, but nobody believed that. They were in Philadelphia. He was really slurring his words. And then he ordered up a limousine and took it from Philadelphia back to New York. He's like, that's enough. But of course we all remember, well, if you don't remember it, but you probably heard it, you may not remember it, when he had to break the news of John Lennon, right? Little things like that. There was what the great thing about Cosell was his command of the English language. He was brilliant at that. He had words that people didn't know, right? And people, you know, obviously remember, Muhammad Ali, you know, saying, I don't know what truculent means, but if it's good, that's me. But Cosell was a master with the vocabulary, but he was also authoritative. And so when a certain thing would happen that would, that required news to kick in, Cosell was the right guy to do it. He was the right guy to do it. He went in one of his books, and he talked about the 72 Olympics that had the Israeli hostages.
Yeah.
He wanted to be a part of that broadcasting. He wanted to be part of the news division that was covering that because he was that smart. But there was a transition of this program where the game became more important, right? So the game used to be sort of the thing you'd watch, but the show was in the booth, and then they sort of moved away from that. It started to break up a little bit, and then the game became the most important thing, to now where the game is the most important thing. And I think one of the best lines that I read in Monday Night Mayhem was that today you have, you know, back then in the 70s with Cosell and Meredith and Frank Gifford, you had Monday Night Football, the TV show. Now you just have football on Monday nights, and that's the difference.
And, you know, I mean, even though you and I both kind of, you know, hate the fact that there were two games Monday and there's going to be two games coming up on this Monday, the one thing I did like was the fact that it was on ABC.
Yeah, network television.
Network television. I mean, great to have it back there again. It was like, you know, it just felt nostalgic.
But think of the announcers that have had a turn at Monday Night Football. I mean, Al Michaels had a turn, obviously. He was one of the longer broadcasters on that with Dan Dierdorf. Then you had Boomer Esiason on the broadcast. You had Dan Fouts on the broadcast. You had John Madden eventually. Remember what a big deal it was when John Madden was moving.
I'm waiting for you to say
booth.
One name.
Dennis Miller.
There it is.
Was in it. Was in the broadcast. Tony Kornheiser did Monday Night Football. Dennis Miller's hiring was an attempt to go back to trying to make it more of a television show.
And honestly, I don't think he was that bad. I know people hated him.
Right.
But I don't think he was that bad.
Yeah. Right.
Didn't really know anything about football, but
who was the woman? Lisa Guerrero did Monday Night Football.
She
said it was a nightmare. Every week she had nerves and panic attacks every game. Every time her mic they went to her, she couldn't do it. Like she was like she would get yelled at. She claims she got yelled at by producers in her ear, which is the worst if you're ever on a TV thing to have a producer barking at you in your ear. But they've had so many different iterations of this.
Come on, we can't forget the other one.
Which is?
OJ.
Oh, OJ. OJ, yeah. OJ was on Monday Night Football. That's right. Mike Tirico, Ron Jaworski, John Gruden was on the broadcast for a long time.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a long
don't forget here. Jason Witten and his big mistakes and all that. Yeah, Monday Night Football on this date, 1970. And it's still around to this date, going strong with Buck and Aikman. We'll continue his Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, 1970, Throwback Thursday on the first game of Monday Night Football. It's Bears versus, Browns versus Jets.
Yes.
The first game. Joe Namath on there, on that broadcast. We were just talking about some of the announcers on Monday Night Football, and I brought up Jason Witten. He really was terrible.
Yeah, he was.
He was really bad. He was really bad. And I hate to say this, but I hate it when broadcasters get the large events and they stink, right? Like we talked about this with Tom Brady. Greg Olson is doing a really good job at Fox as Kevin Burkhart's lead analyst. That's the number one team at Fox, right? And people were like, well, Tom Brady, he'll just get that seat. And I'm like, well, why would he get that seat? I know he's Tom Brady. He's got a name, of course. Is he good at the job? Because eventually you do want somebody good at the job. After a while, you're like, yeah, I get it. He's Tom Brady, but he doesn't say anything good. He misreads plays. He doesn't use the telestrator very well. Witten would draw something up on the telestrator only for it to turn out to be like the exact opposite of what he drew up. It was so bad. When he decided to go back, I think he went back to the NFL for a year or two after that. It was well-deserved. Like, that's the thing I would have done. For my confidence, I would have jumped right back to football, played a little bit more football, and then left that way. Rather than the last thing people remember me is, I was terrible on Monday Night Football. But remember the mobile platform that Booger McFarland got, the Booger Mobile? What a dumb idea that was. That was stupid. Just a gimmick. Now they're looking for gimmicks. Right? I mean, now they're like, oh, we've got a bad Monday night game coming up. We're going to have a chance for you to win something if you stay tuned to the broadcast. And that wasn't the case for a while. But
you didn't need anything.
You didn't need anything. Monday Night Football was Monday Night Football.
I mean, the most amazing thing to me, and I never experienced this, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, I know you did, and we've talked about it over and over. In fact, we probably talked about it like last week. Was that how popular it was as a television show, starting at 9 p.m.
Right.
Eastern time.
Yep, exactly.
That, to me, is just absolutely amazing that even at 9 p.m., a start time at 9 p.m., it was still one of the most popular programs year in and year out.
Yep, it really was. And 9 p.m., and people stayed up and watched it to the end, to that 12:30 mark. And they stayed up every Monday on the East Coast to watch that. It's crazy. Really, it was, and again, it was something that was not considered to be a home run right off the bat. It wasn't obvious. When Pete Rozelle decided to do that, he did not think, like, this is easily going to work. But all the networks were like, okay, I guess, maybe. And ABC was like, well, we're not beating CBS. CBS had like a murderer's row lineup at the time. And they're like, well, we might as well take a shot at this and let's see what happens. And they ended up winning. Rune Arledge was the big time producer. Chet Forty was the guy that was the director of the show for many, 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 many years. Chet Forty liked to party. That was one of his things. He did not mind. Chet Forty was a guy that did not mind the fame that came with Monday Night Football. He did not mind arriving in a city, getting into a hotel. And these were first class hotels too. They were staying at the high end hotels. That's when ABC would spend money on everything. And he had no problems going down to the hotel bar and telling women that he was the director of Monday Night Football. And to prove it, he brought them into the booth.
Yeah.
He would
Why
bring
wouldn't
them,
you?
There was a story. He told a story about they were in Dallas and he met a couple women and he invited them into the booth and they came into the booth and they were all over the place while he was directing Monday Night Football and the girls were having a great time. They loved it. They were in a TV direct booth. It was awesome. Everybody's having fun. And he did this all the time. He did this all the time. And Rune Arledge, again, ABC Sports president. And he never showed up on site ever. And Rune Arledge showed up out of nowhere to this Dallas game and went into the booth and he saw the girls and he goes in, he looks around, leaves. Chet Forty freaks out. Get the girls out of here. Get these girls out of here. Oh, girls had to leave. So Forty's kind of nervous about this. You know, they go back to New York and he's like, I got to address this. So he said, hey, Rune, he goes, I'm glad to see you in Dallas. He goes, why didn't you stick around? And Rune Arledge said, I didn't have a seat. And Forty took the message, right? He goes, I knew what that meant. No more girls. So the next week, no girls. The week after, girls. He couldn't help himself. He's like, it was too addicting. Every place they went, they were the star of the city. Everywhere they went. Everyone was excited about Monday Night Football being in your town. He couldn't help himself. He's like, of course, I had girls back in the booth. Why wouldn't I? And I was like, of course. Why wouldn't you use that as a little braggadocious thing in a bar in a hotel back in 1973? Why not? All right, so earlier I was talking about quarterbacks. And I've addressed this before. And it comes on the heels of Justin Fields. And it comes on the heels of everybody sort of picking apart Justin Fields' play. And I am wondering if we have a problem with how we're evaluating quarterbacks in this league. Mike Sando at The Athletic, as I mentioned earlier, has an article about the youth of and the level of experience that's in the NFL right now. That right now, quarterbacks are the youngest collective age since 1956. It's the youngest group of quarterbacks we've had in almost 60, 70 years. That's a long time. Now, granted, one of the things that he does point out is that we've just seen over the last couple of years the retirements of Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan. Like, these were guys that were starters in their 30s, late 30s, in Tom Brady's case, into his, you know, deep 40s, 44, 45. But in the end, you lost a whole bunch of that. So there is a natural youth movement that's coming. But the average age of a quarterback in the NFL today is 27 years old. And that means that we're not seeing tons and tons of experience at the position. Here's the list of quarterbacks that have 1 to 4 years experience in the NFL right now. And these are all starters. Anthony Richardson, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young. That's obvious. There's three rookies, first-round picks. Brock Purdy, Desmond Ridder, Sam Howell, Kenny Pickett, Mac Jones, Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa. That's 10. That's 10 guys that are hovering among that 1 to 2 years experience. 1 to 3 years experience. When you get to 4 through 8, you got Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert, Daniel Jones, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes. So in the second tier of quarterbacks from 4 to about 8, I forgot to mention Trevor Lawrence in the early one. Now you're talking, okay, these are still very young guys with a little bit more experience. You know who's got 13 plus more years experience in the NFL right now? Act on a roster? Matt Stafford is playing.
Yep.
And Aaron Rodgers, who's not. Those are the only two. Those are the only two guys with 13-plus years experience in the National Football League.
Wow.
9 to 12? Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, Geno Smith, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill might not be long for this league. Russell Wilson could not be long for this league if they're willing to take the dead cap money hit.
Man, I'm already starting to hear rumors, too, that if the Vikings lose this weekend, which I hope they do.
Right.
Because against the Chargers. One of those teams is going to be 0-3. Kirk Cousins could be on the trading block.
Yeah, and think about this, too. Derek Carr has got 10 years experience. He had to join a new team.
Yeah, no, that's...
Jimmy Garoppolo, 10 years experience, had to join a new team.
Those both shocked me.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I've known him for 10 years.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So what it's saying is, look, we always are looking at the next best thing, right? Because the league is churning out quarterbacks. And I go back to Baker Mayfield when I was talking about this earlier. You got Baker Mayfield, who's starting for Tampa Bay, and that's fine. But he was the number one overall pick in 2018, and he's playing for team number 4. That says a lot about him and this league. What is it? Is there a common denominator? It cannot be that these guys can't play quarterback at a high level. Maybe the high level is so high, very, very few people can get there. Maybe the expectation is that the position is so complex and it requires such a deep understanding of the sport that the only people that you can get to play it at the level it needs to be played at are the Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence's of the world, Tom Brady obviously before, Peyton Manning before, Andrew Luck before. But the reality of it is that Anthony Richardson, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, if you were to just pull back and just take a guess, they don't stand a chance. I mean, we're already talking about Justin Fields not being a starting quarterback. Is that the debate today? That this kid can't play in the league? Yeah, it is. It is a legit debate. There are things he's not doing that you need to do as a quarterback. Is it coaching? Is it the complexity of the offenses? Is it not playing to somebody's strength? It's ridiculous. All right, we're going to take a look at the Giants and Niners tonight. Can Wink Martindale devise a defense to stop the Niners? We'll talk about that next.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. A little 1970 on the anniversary of the start of Monday Night Football continuing today. Let it be. That's how we bring it back for tonight's game between the Niners and the Giants. A double-digit favorite for the 49ers, and rightfully so, should I mention.
Yeah.
Giants.
If it could, maybe triple. Let's be honest.
The Giants will be without Saquon Barkley tonight. He'll miss at least 3 weeks with an ankle sprain. Yep. Exactly. We talked about this
with
relying
on the arm of good old Daniel Jones.
Good old, whatever worked in the game against Arizona needs to work tonight against the 49ers. But the 49ers are too strong.
You know why that worked? Because the message came down from the ownership down to the coaches going, hey, guys, we can't beat the Giants.
What are we doing? Why are we leading at halftime? Yeah. What are we doing here?
This isn't us. This isn't us this season. Why do you think I got rid of our best quarterback and playing a rocket scientist instead?
Exactly. If you are the Giants and you're Wink Martindale, you can blitz all day long. That's what he likes to do. Can blitz all day long. Purdy's pretty good against the blitz, and he's got weapons that will burn you to death if you keep blitzing, and they can beat it. They can get behind the blitz. It could be a long night. The one thing you want to do with the Giants, and this is what they did in the Super Bowl against Buffalo, is you want to keep the ball. You want to keep the ball as long as you possibly can. And you can't do that if you don't have a good running game and you don't have Saquon Barkley. So they're going to have to try to go on 13-play drives. Good luck with that San Francisco defense. Good luck. That's really the only way that the Giants are going to get to win this game. The only way they're going to have a chance to win this game is if they sort of have a blueprint like they did, 25 years ago, 20, 30 years ago when they were in Super Bowl 25, where they knew Kelly and the Bills were strong, but if they kept the ball, kept O.J. Anderson on the field and kept just driving and driving and driving, that they could win, and they ended up in a tight game that they did win. But the great thing about the Niners, and this is really key, when we talk about other teams in the NFL, when we talk about the Chiefs, let's say, when we say they've got Patrick Mahomes and they've got Travis Kelce and they all the things that they have, right? Yeah, the wide receivers, Sky Moore and all that. Yeah, but still, they got Patrick Mahomes. And defensively, they've got Chris Jones, but we don't talk about other things. Same thing with the Bengals. The Bengals' defense is actually pretty good, and yet we don't really talk about it. But with the Niners, you could do a whole segment on their offense, and you could do a whole segment on their defense. You could do a whole game plan.
You might be able to do a whole show
exactly just
on them.
They are so complete on both sides of the ball. That you do talk, you can talk about, you don't even have to bring up Brock Purdy.
No.
Or Christian McCaffrey to talk about how the defense alone could beat the Giants.
Like, listen, Brandon Ayuk might not play tonight.
Right. Got a shoulder injury.
Yeah. Do you think they care?
Right. Exactly. Too many weapons. That's,
Brandon Ayuk's out. Oh, what a bummer.
But they're going to let Nick Bosa roll.
Yep.
They've got so many guys that are going to make it very difficult for Daniel Jones and the Giants offense to do the blueprint of stay on the field, pick up 5 yards, pick up 3 yards, pick up 4 yards. Let's do a 12, 13-play drive, get it down the field so we don't let Christian McCaffrey and Brock Purdy and Deebo Samuel tear us apart. And now that's the game plan tonight. But remember, I mean, the Giants in six quarters were shut out. I mean, I respect Micah Parsons as one of the best defensive players in the game. Probably, T.J. Watt and him are going to be in the running for
a two-horse race for defensive player of the year. I think you're right.
Maybe Nick Bosa gets involved in that later on. Who knows? But the reality of it is the pressure that they got to the Dallas got to Daniel Jones. What do you think the Niners are going to do? I mean, if that disrupted the Giants so badly, how do you think the Niners are going to play defensively? This is going to be an interesting game. I mean, from the standpoint of watching one team basically flip it all over the place against a Giants team that's going to walk away from this 1-2, and everybody wondering if last year was a little too much of a feel-good story to be committed to all of it. But yeah, that's how good the Niners are. Now, listen, in the NFL, I don't take anything for granted, but I just don't see it with the Giants. I can't see a situation where they come out and win this game. It's the home opener for the 49ers too, right? I mean, they've won at Pittsburgh and at Los Angeles. So to me, it's an interesting game from the standpoint of how good the Niners are, but the Giants, I just don't see a formula for them to win this game without Barkley.
So the only thing I think about then is this going to be a good Thursday night game? Like, You know, because we made the comments last year, mainly jokes last year, that Al Michaels, I mean, he was just mailing it in all season because he knew, I mean, the games were terrible.
Right.
On the one hand, you do have a fun experience watching the Niners play because, I mean, they are just a fun, explosive team. But is it going to be a good game?
I don't know. I mean, I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I listen, why were Giant fans upset with the strategical offseason workings of a Daniel Jones contract / franchise tag Saquon Barkley? Why? Because Barkley was really the key to their offense last year. Don't get me wrong, Jones played well. But Barkley was the main reason the Giants won games and went to the playoffs. He was involved in a majority of their offensive plays. So the Giant fans were looking at it and saying, wait a minute, don't franchise the running back. Franchise the quarterback. That's still an issue up in the air. We know Barkley, if he stays healthy, is an absolute integral part of the offense. The quarterback could be replaced with somebody else. Now you're requiring Daniel Jones to go out there and be the leader of this team without Barkley. He's got to find a way to beat one of the best teams in the NFL, one of the best defenses in the NFL, without the main reason they won 9 games last year. And to me, I'm sorry, I don't believe in Daniel Jones that much to think he can pull this off. Now, granted, I like the way he played in the second half against Arizona. This is not Arizona. Right? I mean, the Niners, as we said earlier, they are as good on offense as they are on defense, and good on defense as they are on offense. They are fantastic. So now Barkley is going to go up against a defense that is going to come at him with pressure, and he's got no running back to rely on. He's got no back out of the backfield that's good enough. I mean, he's got running backs. I mean, look, we'll see those guys kick in. But when you got Fred Warner, when you got Nick Bosa coming at you, and Jones, who's already taken 10 sacks this season, 2 games, that's tremendous. He can't get rid of the ball fast enough. And it's, who do you trust on a short week? I'm going to take the Niners.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, because I don't know if they've used all their energy. Right. It just feels like, Christian McCaffrey had a gigantic game last week. You know, he could probably, take a backseat to Deebo Samuel this week.
Right.
Or George Kittle. Or, insert player to be named here.
And the Giants have injuries on the offensive line. I mean, Andrew Thomas is hurt.
Yeah, and I mean,
Brent Breeson is hurt.
I really do think that last season was the anomaly to Daniel Jones' career.
Well, after the first 2 games, yeah, it's easy to sort of go point to. I mean, just 2 quarters out of 8, he played well.
Yeah.
And the team he played well against is considered one of the worst teams in the league.
Yep. So I don't know what to make of him yet because, I mean, he had the great season. I'm not going to say great. He had a really, really good season last year. Got the contract. And now what?
Well, we'll know tonight.
Yeah.
When Matt Breida and Gary Brightwell come on down. You're the next contestant on running back for the Giants. Dun-dun-dun-dun.
This game will... I have a feeling it'll be over at half.
That's right.
I'll be on to watching something else at halftime. It's Dancing with the Stars on.
Dancing with the Stars on is the Golden Bachelor start yet?
Sign me up for that. Can't wait to watch that.
Is the Golden Bachelor a good idea? Is that a good idea?
Do we have to hit every demographic?
Is that what we're doing now is that jump the shark now? We've got elderly people on The Bachelor.
All I'm going to say is this, right? One of the lady contestants, because that's what it is. I mean, after all, remember, guys, it's a game show.
Right.
One of the lady contestants, I think, is in her mid to late 70s.
Okay. Yeah. Now, they're either widows or they're longtime divorcees.
Now she looks good for her age.
Sure.
But it's still mid to late 70s, or maybe she's early 70s and I'm aging her. I don't know. I just know that...
Well, if that's on, you might be able to watch it in the second half of tonight's Giants-Niners game.
That might be better than Giants-Niners.
I hope tomorrow we've had a pleasant surprise for Thursday Night Football.
Do you think Al Michaels tunes in? during the broadcast.
Do you think Al Michaels pays attention to the game?
I mean, no. Do you think he watches The Golden Bachelor?
Oh, my goodness. Got it on the side, like watching it on the side. Oh, that's crazy. All right. Yeah, we're two coming up next.